Let's call the meeting to order.
In reference to Code Ohio, just put in there a direct link to that code.
Let's get started here. Can we get a roll call vote, please? Are you roll call?
Roll call.
Excuse me?
Seal.
Here.
Barnwell.
Here.
Mergen.
Here.
Miller.
Here.
Holstrom. Absent. Smith.
Here.
Cable.
Here. Next item is approval of the agenda. We do have one change. We failed to elect a vice chair in the past, and so we need to get that done today. I wonder if we could put that, let's put that right before staff comments, if we could. Are there any other changes or additions? I think let's get a voice vote on the amended agenda. All in favor of the amended agenda, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Any changes or additions to the minutes? Hearing none, the minutes will stand approved. Public comments. This is the time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Planning and Zoning Commission. Are there any comments for the public tonight? And you're the public. Yeah, well, I'll do that.
Good afternoon. I'm Leanne Harder, County Outreach and Special Projects Manager. I did give you each a copy of a memo that I prepared on behalf of the C2C project team. I'm not going to read it, but just quickly summarize it for you. The C2C project team met a couple weeks ago, maybe even last week, to discuss the next step, which is the implementation matrix for the Cornerstone to Capstone comp plan after adoption of by the board in early June. On the memo, you will see a schedule that we've put together, as well as our initial discussions, kind of where we are as a project team. The reason I'm here, just to let you know, this month, obviously, and next month, and maybe your September meeting, depending on when the joint meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission, Conservation Board, and Board of Supervisors is scheduled, you'll have a similar memo, and I may or may not be here. I hadn't had it prepared in time for the packet, so I had to do my due diligence and come see you all this evening. but I'll be glad to answer any questions. Right now we're in the phase where we're looking through the C2C plan, all the strategies and objectives, and then coming up with action steps, and then that tie back to the original goal in that section, then establishing time frames, budget implications, staffing implications. What else? I think that's about it. Any questions for me?
Thanks, Leah.
Thank you.
And any other comments from the public? Okay, we're on to our main business for tonight. Jerry, you want to tell us about the draft special events ordinance?
Yeah, I just want to first start by saying we didn't have any development review applications for you this afternoon, but we thought it would be a great opportunity to have you weigh in and provide input on some items that we've been working on related to the work program for the new members. The Planning and Zoning Commission staff and the Board of Supervisors have been meeting in November for the last few years to go over to talk about a lot of different issues related to land use and planning, but to come up with things that typically as a staff we don't see and work on a day-to-day basis. And so we've got this adopted work program. If you don't have a copy, we can make sure that we get a copy for you. Most of the items were carried over. There's a total of 15. Most of them were carried over from 2015, which is what we're bringing for you this afternoon for discussion purposes. And we added, I think, four new items to make up the program. But what we have is three things. One is a proposed ordinance for special events. Again, these are all things that were on the 2015 work program. We were supposed to do a review of mobile home parks. And then the last thing was siting for construction and demolition landfill. With special events, currently in the land development regulations, we have a CUP, conditional use permit process review for temporary facilities, for music, entertainment, religious meetings, things of that nature. And I think the intent with this draft ordinance is that possibly those things could be incorporated into this ordinance. I think initially we were thinking that this could be like a standalone ordinance that would be like maybe somewhat separate from the land development regulations, similar to like the E911 addressing and other ordinances that the county has adopted. We're not married to that idea, but that's typically what we were thinking about when we started the creation of it.
Is the idea that this would replace some of the CUP?
Yeah.
It provides guidance for events that currently fall under CUP, but really are minimally under the...
Right. Yep, that's the idea, that those things would be folded into this draft ordinance. And two, what prompted this, the start of it, was when we had Center Grove Orchard, there was a, one of the things that they were doing there was a dog show, which kind of prompted, we thought we needed to get going on a special events ordinance. That activity actually got approved as a part of what they were doing.
I think it started before that with the Blacks.
Before my time, yeah.
With some of the requests for some of the types of events that they wanted to hold there.
And they wanted a campsite, and they wanted to have a user's barn for
concerts and things like that.
All that
so.
Stuff.
All right.
Then the next morning, use it for church.
All right.
Sorry. And then with mobile home parks, it's kind of a twofold. One of the parks that we are to review is the Crestview, which is on West Ames. There's been some issues with that mobile home park with regard to water quality. There's been some recent Story County Board of Health action on that. They've been struggling for a while in meeting the DNR quality, water quality requirements. And so the Board of Health did act to downsize that park to no more than 15 units and no more than 25 people. And there's time set out to accomplish that. So right now with that park, we're dealing with the people issues. Some of those folks are going to have to try to find homes elsewhere. So we incorporated the reviews that we were doing with the other parks that are in the county, unincorporated, and the ones that were in the city. We made contacts with those owners and operators to try to find out if they had spaces available, if they had units that they rented out to people, if they were planning to do expansions, that type of thing. So it was kind of a twofold, very timely thing, and we've reviewed all the unincorporated except for Crestview, although I've been there with the environmental health staff. But some of those issues are going to be ongoing. So that's why that item is before you, and Emily will talk about that. And then Amelia will talk about the construction and demolition landfill siting process. We have had some discussions with the Emergency Management Department to get that started. So I think, the first thing is the special events ordinance. We were thinking that it would be like a standalone ordinance. And I think I'll just go through section by section at any time. If you have questions or comments, let's, this is a discussion. So feel free to add to any part of this as you see fit. I think the intent is that we will be back before you with any proposed changes or input that you provide. So it starts off with the purpose. It talks about the time, place, and manner of holding special events, and we're talking about private properties. And we're talking about properties that may be county-owned, whether it be road right-of-way or county properties. If there's like a road race, whether it's running or a bicycle race, that's probably something that we need to know about. The various departments, the sheriffs, emergency management, everybody for the most part. So, and then it basically states that it may be permitted in any zoning district. I think initially, at first, we were thinking, you know, maybe not in a residential district, but we could have areas where it's not developed, but it's land that's unimproved, but zoned in a residential class. And, you know, maybe a church would like to use it for a, you know, a temporary worship service or something, by putting up a temporary structure or a tent or something. So that's why we indicated potential for any zoning district. Sub 2, it kind of gets to the heart of what planning and zoning is. You know, it deals with the protection or promotion of health, safety, and welfare. And again, we're trying to look out for not only the land itself, but the surrounding land uses, and trying to protect the adjacent properties from disturbances, nuisances, threats to health, safety, traffic, you know, how many people are going to be coming to the area or crossing through the area, and then threats to or damages to the property or surrounding properties. Administration section is the next section that falls under the director for administration, implementation, enforcement. And then it goes into definition, which is really key to the whole thing. What is a special event? And right now it says it's a temporary outdoor activity occurring one or more consecutive days in a year, and may be located in a temporary structure or tent.
Hey, Jerry.
Yep.
Does it need to be a temporary structure or tent? If I have a barn and I sweep out my barn and I have some event in the barn, that would still qualify as a special event, but it's not a temporary structure, right?
Yeah, potentially, like if you want to use it for like receptions or ceremonies, we actually try to address that because we get calls about that quite a bit. Yeah, you're right.
I don't want to get too far ahead of you know, your further definitions, but I mean, you define it as a special event can only happen in a temporary structure.
It does say maybe.
Yeah.
So maybe. May implies may or may not, right?
I have a
well,
question.
I would. Yeah. I mean, why would we specify temporary structure if we're not? You know, I don't know.
I have another question. It may be similar. Maybe. Going on the same thing. And it does add to this. I'm trying to figure out when something is not a special event.
Yeah,
and I look at the second page, and there's some exclusions, the schools, all this. And then it's neighborhood block parties, which are held in a residential district on a privately maintained road. So my question is, what is the rural equivalent of that? Because this applies to all zoning districts. Out in the A1 agricultural district, we do not have neighborhood block parties in a residential district on a privately maintained road.
Probably not in an A1, but...
No, but this applies to an A1, but there's no similar exception. And let me just do an example. A family picnic in a front yard. Is that covered under this?
I don't think we want to regulate neighborhood block parties or family gatherings, or but we do.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you.
Because that was just, yeah, we don't want to be involved in block parties or family events or if I have a graduation or something to do with relatives. That's
and,
their business.
And I read through this several times to see if I saw an exclusion there for things like that. And I didn't see anything in the language that would allow that kind of, or would say that's excluded.
That could be folded into the block party part of it. We could add language.
I mean, family gatherings and something there.
Right.
If you're out in an agricultural district and your next door neighbor is a quarter mile away and you have adequate parking and you have adequate bathrooms in your house, can you not have a family reunion of 50 people that spills out into your front yard?
I don't think we want to know about those things.
You don't think you want to? Good.
I
didn't want to fill out this application, Jerry, and we have one next month. Sometimes it's when you have a real-life example that you say, how would this ordinance work?
Yeah. Right.
I think our intent in drafting it was that we would not be involved in that. Unless you guys see it differently.
It is one or more consecutive days in 8 years. Does that say we can only do it once a year?
So you have two family reunions.
Well, if that's exempt.
You can't have a graduation party and a 50th year anniversary party in the same year.
That's exempt. You can have as many of those as you want. We don't. This is not going to be something that's going to require a special event permit.
Okay,
what
then you're.
That's exempt.
I think the language has to be broadened.
That's what I'm saying. We can add language for family gatherings. And
so this sort of thing is a challenge because, for lots of reasons, the biggest challenge we're dealing with right now is that you've worked hard to prepare a draft that can only be shot full holes with us.
That's fine. That's what we're doing. Let's talk about it.
You synthesize something, we respond to it, and so it's going to seem really negative. So.
No, we're just
we have to have a starting point. That's
I wonder if we, as a starting point, if we could rewind and go from the other direction and work top down. What are the types of events that are most critical to regulate, and the types of impacts that are most critical to regulate?
Well, we list receptions and ceremonies.
If we talk in like real world tangible examples.
Okay.
So what pops into mind for me is a farm sale, an auction.
Yeah, that's true.
Do we want to regulate those?
Well, so
I can tell you from where I came from, we didn't do that. But
okay.
So
I think that's where we need to determine what the critical impacts are that we're trying to avoid. Because an auction generates a lot of traffic. Creates a lot of off-street parking issues.
Right.
Typically doesn't have porta potties, but probably should. Typically doesn't have water, but probably should. Might happen in a fairly remote location.
No food.
There's no food. There's maybe no shade. Yet all these things are encompassed in an event that is there and gone in about
and they park on the road.
And we all just put up with it.
Right.
And we all just work around it for 2 hours. So I'm wondering if we could work from that direction. Like, what are the things we're trying to when does it become a problem? Does something become a problem that means?
What are the types of special events that we're targeting? What's the target for this? What are some example targets of this?
Well, we tried to list some of those, like music events. I mean, you got a lot of people coming to one location. Traffic. You got parking needs. You got noise. Lighting. Go ahead.
No, I don't need to interrupt you. I guess I was wondering when I first read this, kind of what is the problem you're trying to solve?
There you go.
Right.
You mentioned the Center Grove Orchard, and so I wonder, is that primarily the
catalyst
entity, the catalyst, thank you, the thing that spurred this? That's one question. Another question I have is this proposed ordinance draft modeled after a different county's? That's great. I mean, I just wonder, you know, and obviously you did that and tried to form it to address what's happening in Story County or what you've seen in Story County, maybe in the CUP applications. I guess I'm wondering, where is the need for this? Have there been problems with CUP or activities, or maybe activities that never came through the CUP process that people have complained about?
And other than
so where's it coming from?
Part of your work sessions. And other than that, why do we need this?
Well, for me, it was probably the Center Grove Orchard
okay.
item that brought it as, okay, this is, we don't have anything that addresses that, nothing at all, really. And then we do already have something in the conditional use permit process for temporary entertainment, music. It's already in place.
Where is that, by the way, in the book?
In the book.
Hey, I got
the book. Conditional use.
All right.
Another question, Jerry, while you're maybe looking at that is, that occurred to me is if this is sort of trying to cover some things that would have been covered under a CUP, I feel like we need to mimic the requirements of approving a CUP in here somewhere. And this says in reviewing the application, departments shall consider a number of factors. But those don't seem to exactly mirror what the CUP factors are exactly. And I just, you mentioned disturbance, the word disturbance and nuisance and damage to surrounding property, and I don't have those requirements in front of me for approving a CUP, but I feel like maybe those should be reflected here in, you know, in full. If this is intended to cover activities that would have gone through the CUP process.
But your first comment was, why do we need this?
Right. I'm just trying
to...
Those are my thoughts.
We have a special events.
Where is it?
Well, it's in chapter... It's 90, table 90-1. It's in the back of the conditional use permit. Chapter.
Okay. And it's like he's
going to... It's like the ninth thing down. And there's no... It just says where it's permitted in an A1 or a Greenbelt Conservation District. And there's no detailed standards, so we're really not really telling the applicant what additional information we need, what the planning zoning commission needs. Board of Adjustment needs.
It's just the usual standards for a CUP traffic and
yeah, there's no additional standards. And I think part of the, you know, the reason for this is to maybe create a process that's maybe a little more timely than the CUP process, because the CUP process can be a 2.5 month, and in the real world, we're talking real world, you know, if you're doing an event, usually the last thing you think of is, oh, gosh, did anybody check with the city, the county? Do we need something for this? Is there a requirement? And that's what, like a week or, if you're lucky, a week, 2 weeks maybe, you'll get a contact from somebody, they want to do something, and well, okay, yeah, here's the process, and guess what? And, you know, if they listen to you, they're not going to be able to do what they want to do.
It's just a really good point. I mean... People don't think they're going to have to go before a commission to have a whatever.
And have a yard sale.
Exactly.
So for simple things, it's kind of set up if it's kind of people-based. If it's less than 50, there's more of an expedited process. But if, you know, there's more people involved, more than 500, then that's a full blow. It's like a CUP process. It's something that would be reviewed by the staff, by county departments. It would come to planning and zoning commissions and ultimately go to board of supervisors for action. So that's kind of a thought.
And thinking about it and how we would apply it, then we want our target, right, our target event type, right, why do we need this, is smaller, faster turnaround type events, right?
Part of it.
So how do we define, how do we identify, how do we segregate items that should go in a CUP versus items that need a special event permit?
Right.
I mean, if we're setting up an ordinance, then somebody needs to look at it and go, I qualify for that or I qualify for that.
You're talking about performance measures, basically. So instead of trying to categorize every possible special event we can think of,
right,
it's how many people, how long does it last?
Right.
You know,
it's like disaster planning. You don't plan for here's what we do in a tornado, and here's what we do in a flood, and here's what we do in a... You might have some specific things, but it's any event that something's unusable. Right? So how do we identify the cases?
Well, and kind of a related question I have is thinking about the Center Grove Orchard. They are a for-profit enterprise. Let's say they want to do a dog show every, you know, July or whatever it is. To me, that probably ought to have a CUP-type process because it's part of their business as opposed to a private reunion party or wedding reception, which, for my money, can go through an expedited process if it meets these criteria of people and whatnot.
It gives the staff an opportunity to say, you're going to need to do something to regulate traffic. You're going to need to do something to mitigate parking.
You right.
An opportunity for we approve, but...
But, you know, Center Grove Orchard keeps wanting to add on special events to its, you know, business model. That seems like it's in a whole different category from these one-off things that are not, you know, part of a business enterprise. So, I mean, their existence and their activities ought to probably have, I think, a higher level of scrutiny.
But is there a tremendous distinction between for-profit and not-profit?
I wouldn't say that it's a distinction because we would have, you know, we wouldn't say non-profit organizations get to bypass the CUP now, right? And I don't think it has to do with that. I think it has to do with established entities.
Right. Sure, that was a poor choice of words on my part.
No, I
didn't mean to distinguish.
No, I get it.
I was thinking about, you know, churches, and they're mentioned here in the exemptions.
Right.
So, anyhow, the idea being, you know,
we
want to amend our business model and incorporate these other things, and we're a going concern, and that kind of, even if it's only once a year.
I'm just trying to, in my head, build the definition of How do we distinguish between what needs a CUP and what needs a special event, right? So it doesn't have anything to do, in my mind, with whether you're a for-profit or a not-for-profit or an individual, or it has to do with frequency. It has to do with probably the scale of the event, the scale of the impact. It has to do with whether or not it's part of a going concern, as you pointed out, right? It might be a special event that you only want to do once a year for, you know, or we're going to have a three-day fair once a year, every year, as part of, you know, a going concern profit.
And that could be approved under a CUP for the Center Grove Orchard indefinitely.
Right.
But maybe they need to go through that process instead of...
Right. But if you were a private individual and we want to use the Ames Dog Park to do a dog show, okay, that'd be a special event. That's obviously not a CUP, right? I mean, you can distinguish that based on not a going concern, probably the scope, probably the regularity. I mean, in my mind. And so I would say that feedback is design the ordinance around that criteria so that we can clearly identify what still needs to go through the CUP process and then what needs to go through the special event process. And then I think it gets easier with defining what are the exceptions and who needs it and who doesn't and why.
And I think that really shows up when you've got, there are exceptions that you're giving which might have huge numbers of people. But you're saying because it's a school or a church is exempt. Maybe it should be. But I don't know.
The facility and, you know, if they're within the capacity limits of the building and they've got the parking, then is this something that we...
Then that makes approval really easy.
And
so what? And that makes approval of the special event application super easy.
That would be exempt.
Well,
okay.
It would be exempt. If
it's still going to have, if it falls within the scope of impact, noise, etc., would we still want it automatically to be exempt, or would we want it to still come and say, you should have...
Well, I guess that's a good... I mean, if it's on school property, do we want to be involved in regulating what somebody's doing on school property? In, like, an auditorium where it's going to be inside of a building, where they're going to be on off-street, on-site parking?
If it's a significant deviation from regular use, I would say yes.
Okay, let me give you an example. 4th of July, it's real recent. 4th of July, they had a special event called a parade. They had special events following the parade.
In the city.
Okay?
And you had to have a parade permit in ahead of time with the city of Ames. I know because I was involved in one.
That's not rural.
Right. No, it's not
that's
rural.
That's outside of our...
So what's that process for, like, a parade? Are those reviewed by staff, and then do they go to city council?
I think they just go to staff, but you really are following the parade regulations. And the city is providing, you know, the law enforcement and anything else that's needed in terms of emergency services. So really all you're applying for there is a place in the parade, and there's a few rules you need to follow. But it's a very well-defined event by an external entity, which is the city. This, you are talking about things that aren't well-defined, and that's probably a lot of the struggle. Mm-hmm. You're trying to figure out all of the things that might happen and then decide where they, you know, whether they're things you could just exempt by ordinance or whether they're things that you would want staff to look at or take to county supervisors. And that's where you also get in kind of in the weeds with the application process, because you may be looking at smaller or larger events of different purpose. And the way I read it, everybody has to go through the same application process.
Yeah, that's what I was reading too.
And I was wondering if that's, some of that might be more than is necessary. It's not an easy policy to write, and as we talk about it, I'm seeing more and more what a difficult one it is. Yeah, more trouble. But I look at it, and let's say the family reunion has 70 people, and you know, whatever, you know, the local fire department has to be notified, the you know, all the things that have to be done.
Well, if it's a family reunion, I don't know that we want to be in that business of regulating what somebody's doing on their property with their family or their relatives or their friends. I think we want to be.
And if they have it at a local park, there's probably a process for going through an approval for that.
Yes.
Like McFarland Park, that building, the conservation staff, they have their own permit review process, and we don't want to be involved in that because they already have their review process.
So you
can use that building for, like, receptions. Or,
so you did have public parks in here, though, county parks, I thought.
Jerry, what were you going to say?
Is there an exemption for family reunions, friends getting together?
No, but Linda's indicated that we need to probably specifically identify that that would be exempt, and that's a good idea.
So again, my question is do we need to start identifying specific exemptions, or do we just need to define it to say, in a way, where if an event is going to have significant impact on, and then we can define it, right? Noise.
It's hard to identify potential types of events, right?
I mean, I don't want to define the types of events. What I want to identify is what are the circumstances on which you would need to apply, right? So if you're going to, and this is what we need to be defined, but if you're going to significantly deviate from normal noise, light, parking, traffic, and we can quantify those, and we can quantify those in a way that's regularity, you know, whatever, we can quantify those in a way that's measurably different than what you're doing with a CUP versus what you normally do, right? So, I don't want to get into everybody's business, but if you're going to have a family reunion, you're going to have 300 people show up, and it's on private property,
or 15.
10 or 15 is not going to have a measurable impact from the difference, right?
What you're saying is it doesn't really matter if they're family members or not.
Right.
The measurable measurable standard is how many people are there, because...
Or maybe you have 40 acres and you're going to mow 10 acres and turn it into a temporary parking lot, and you're going to have no measurable impact on parking or anything except for maybe some traffic. And you could live right off of 30 and have no measurable impact. And would you need a permit? I would say no. You're just having people come on. But if you live out on a rural road and you're going to have 300 people come to your property and you're going to have 100 cars parked on along the road, that's going to be a measurable impact.
Let's allow just like 3 more minutes for this discussion, because I think that we've given you enough
to start over. Thank you.
Okay. I want to get some more opinions here, but I think that I'm thinking along the same lines of Marvin, that we need to use objective, dispassionate, or
yes, non-specific terms, just
right about what's likely to cause impacts, detrimental impacts. And, you know, one of those is how many people are there, and one of those is how long the event's going to last. But I wanted to ask real quickly, does the state have any regulations about what
would trigger the need for porta potties and water and that sort of thing. I wonder if we should check with the health department on that, the county health department, because there might be something. And then does the
kind of speak up?
All right. Yeah, this this Iowa State Health Department does for events, and especially with food. But that's through the health department. Generally, they regulate that. If you're going to have like a food for sale at an event, they have to, each vendor has to get a temporary food permit, basically. So that's something through the state health department. But in terms of like anything for like non-food related, I'm not aware of anything like that.
You said specifically that was for sale.
Right, for sale, correct. Yes. Well, it doesn't have to be commercial. It just has to be someone there. They have to be selling whatever they're making, whether it's food or drink. So,
Ruth, what other opinions do you have about this?
I guess the one concern that I have in terms of how it's like currently written, probably what you guys have voiced as well, is like with just at a wedding in rural Wisconsin, and I'm just thinking they probably had about 150 individuals on private property, and so of course like people were parking up and down the rural road, and so I'm wondering in that situation, they didn't pay for the venue. It was a family friend that hosted, and they had tents set up and music outside. And just wondering, in that situation, of course, like, would you require them to go through the permitting process in order to be able to host that event on their property?
I think the thought was, if it's for family and friends, then yeah. Do it. But if it's for remuneration, it's a for-profit kind of thing. It's set up to allow maybe one time.
I think
we were thinking about, is this something that could be pulled into home business permit, but then that's got traffic limits.
Yeah.
So that's got to be a low-scale thing.
I don't think you can distinguish between
the family or friends. Right. I think that's a slippery problem, because I know we don't want to get into regulating what you do with your property. And, hey, if you're enclosed on your property and you're not having any impact to your neighbors or whatever, then go for it. But the minute that you start deviating from the norm, the minute that you start having an impact, whether it's parking on the road or playing music where your neighbors are, you know, whether it's family or friends or a business or whatever, I think that's where it's the fiduciary duty of the county to say, we think that for the betterment of everyone, some things should be regulated. And I don't care if they're family or friends or it's on your own property or not. It's, Jared, what are your thoughts?
Well, we definitely need more government regulations.
What did you say?
We definitely need more government regulations.
Okay.
Yeah. That was tongue in cheek.
I think it could be simplified, Jerry, to non, I don't know how you word it though, to non private or, I don't know if you can say commercial events, need a special events permit. I don't know if that can be done. Something to simplify it.
Where it's like on commercial property versus things that are on private?
No, I still think it could be, if it's a commercial, if you're having a commercial event, in other words,
you're charging a gate fee.
A farm
yeah,
sale
if you're,
could
if
be
you're selling money. Something, if you're...
That fee would include a farm sale, for crying out loud.
It could, which...
was nuts.
Yeah, I agree.
But that could be written in as an exception. As could family reunions. So, I mean, right?
I don't know if that's possible, Jared. I mean, I don't know.
I struggle with these specific exemptions if it's still going to have the same impact as something else.
I think you need to start from the big end and work down.
Like big end, like numbers, traffic?
Yeah, I think so.
I
can't even see requiring people, whether they're reunions or relatives or completely unrelated people, paying a fee. I have a hard time seeing requiring them to come in if it's going to have even 100 people at the event, if it's not going to last for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Number here in this table. We got temporary facilities for music events, sporting events, entertainment, religious meetings, or similar uses. And that's applicable in the A1 and the Greenbelt.
Mm-hmm. Two areas.
Now,
why does that statement not fill a bill? Why do we need more?
Well, that's certainly part of this discussion. But it's not, it's pretty limited. The music, sports, entertainment, and religious.
And it says, or other
four
opinions,
major
or
categories.
Yep, thanks for the patience here.
But again, it requires a CUP, and if you've got somebody that wants to do these things, it's a pretty involved process. And in reality, most, in my experience, they don't come here to get these. And this is one way to deal with it and provide some input, get some eyes on it, get other departments involved.
Yeah.
The bigger ones, get them to P&Z, get them to the Board of Supervisors, right. And then we're going to regulate. We're going to have people on the site. And
I think the other reason for the ordinance is when you get a call from a neighbor who says, I can't get down my road because of all the parking or for all this noise or whatever, that there's actually some measurable way to enforce it, right? Some measurable way to say, hey, let's...
Well, I mean, you know, can't the county sheriff just come and redirect the traffic? But do we need an ordinance for them?
Will they do that with a private event? They're probably not going to do that. But if it's something that requires a permit and they're supposed to have off-street parking, then we've got something that we can fall back on that they weren't in compliance with.
Okay.
Do you feel like you have any direction at all as to what you mean?
Well,
besides eliminating it?
Well,
I'm not in favor of even having it.
Again, the idea was to try to create something that we could expedite
the process.
Something that's a small scale thing.
Right. I can support something that is more narrowly defined and targeted at large events with dramatic impacts for longer period of time than an afternoon. But that's just like
more than one day kind of thing.
Yeah.
Multiple days.
Well, that's the thing.
Sunday.
That you just said something that's, you know, something in scope, right? But I don't see that that's how it's defined without drawing in exceptions. We don't care what the scope is, if it's this or if it's that. I would just say I don't know why we would have to have exceptions, right?
Well,
we just say if it's this scope and it's going to have this impact.
I mean, if it's school property, though, do we want to be involved in telling what?
Yeah, equal protection concerns here too. I mean, you can't pick five different groups that you're going to exempt from a set of regulations and not be concerned about being.
Yeah. If you're a government entity, we're going to exclude you, but we're going to regulate everybody else.
Or a church or a school.
All right. I think we should wrap it up.
And we don't need a motion on this.
We don't. This is just a discussion. So that's exactly the purpose here, is for us to do what we did. So
I think that perhaps you should also review why is that temporary facilities for music events, why is that even under the conditional uses?
Okay, let's move on to mobile home park site visits, please.
Okay, so part of our work program plan was specifically to review the county's 5 mobile home parks for conformance to land development regulations. So what we did was we tried to initiate contact with all of the mobile home parks in the county. We did, as Jerry said, we're waiting on Crestview just because they're dealing with the people kind of safety issues before we worry about land development regulations. Yeah, water quality issues. Um, there we go. So we did want to initiate some relationships between the park managers and the planning department, provide any information we can to them to let them know what our standards are, and then kind of figure out what they understand and what they don't. Identify any major issues that we see, look at facilities available to residents, evaluate kind of the overall condition of each park, and then again identify any major ordinance violations. So I'll start with Homestead, but here's just a map.
Can you use the light, please? Thank you.
Maybe. Oh, that's a little bit better. I'll just point it out here. We have Homestead to the northeast, or on the north side of Ames, Hickory Grove to the northeast. Country Living is down here right next to Hickory Grove Park. Rolling Hills is just north of Maxwell. And then Crestview, like I said, is on the west side of Ames. Here's just an aerial of Crestview. I think based on the conversation yesterday, they're going to really be, here's where the current homes are, they're really going to be scaling back. And the
That's
homes...
Board of Health meeting.
I'm sorry, what did I say?
You didn't say where.
The Board of Health meeting that took place yesterday. I'm sorry. They're going to be really scaling back, and most of the homes served with the water will be. There won't be any home. Okay. Most of the homes will be focused here. Okay. Looking at Homestead. Homestead was. Homestead was founded in 1970. Once again, this is north of Ames. The first portion of it was founded in 1970. So here's an aerial from the 1970s showing the portion, and this is the eastern portion of what's currently there. They expanded in 1982. They added 28 lots, so that's the expansion. Is on the west side there. And so they have 77 total lots. You can see the sewage lagoons to the east here. And here's some photos. This notice here, there are no sidewalks, and so this is the older part from 1970, the older part of the park. This photo shows the newer part, which does include the sidewalk, so you can see how the ordinance or the requirements have changed over the years. Altogether, Homestead was very clean, very well kept, little garbage, little debris. We were pretty impressed with Homestead. Here's a picture of their green space, their play area. And right here, it's a little hard to see, but is their storm shelter. So they do have a storm shelter. The other thing I wanted to say about Homestead is that they don't have any rental. So all of the homes are owned by the residents. Rolling Hills, once again, this is north of Maxwell. Rolling Hills... was established in 1977, and you can see this is a picture from the 80s. This is the area that was established originally. In the 90s, you can see they kind of expanded to meet most of that area. But let's see, in 95 and 96, they expanded all the way down south here. There are, I think, about 129 lots at Rolling Hills, and 34 of those are rental units. And all of their rental units are in this new part of the park, the newer park. Yep, there are the rental units. Rolling Hills also has a conditional use permit that they got in 2013 to convert four of their lots into camper spaces. So they allow two campers per lot, so for a total of eight campers on four spaces. That was something interesting we found. Let's see what else.
Yeah, I remember that. They did that for, there was a project out there. Do you remember that, Liam? There was a project out there where there's construction and they needed, like, temporary housing and stuff and places. So.
Yeah.
Right. They did want construction and then they, yeah.
Yeah. So here's a picture of that area. They're not all full right now, but I'm sure that will change over time. Rolling Hills, we noticed quite a bit of kind of, I don't want to say debris. This is an old like deck off the house that was there. They will fix it up once they put a new house there. So this was another concern we had at Rolling Hills. This is a big grate or a big sewer drain, and this grate we could move around. So here's Jerry for scale.
Underneath that grate, it's like metal bar.
Yeah,
so a tire could probably roll across it, but like if you're skateboarding, if that top piece was gone,
yeah, or like
a skateboard, something could get.
So we did talk, we did mention this to Darren, and since it's a private road, he said we can't require them to do anything, but we can strongly suggest, and you'll see later how we're going to do that. And I also wanted to point out the road condition. The road condition is not as good as we saw at other parks. This is a cold patch that they had done recently. And it's really just a gravel consistency. It's not.
They weren't happy with the quality of it. It didn't turn out as they expected it to turn out.
Yeah.
These are all private roads inside the. Okay.
So I think. And I can. Here. There are 12 empty lots at Rolling Hills. I think Homestead just had like two empty lots. And there are four vacant homes without titles. So I'm a little, they have that whole eastern section right here that has utilities, but they're not what they call, they said brought up. Right?
Yeah, I don't know that it's.
They said
they couldn't. You can't like bring a unit in there. It's not ready for that.
Yeah,
so there would be some infrastructure cost on the park owner's part.
Right. So right. And so they're gonna fill other spaces before they do that, unless someone specifically requests one of these spots, and then they would allow the resident to pay for the improvements. They'd be fine with that, but. They said about $1,000 per lot, so they're waiting on that. These are the rental units along that newer portion. These are the newer homes in the park. These are what Rolling Hills has brought in to rent. They're about $700 a month, so. That was just another interesting thing we learned. This is the community facility. It's laundry and it's a storm shelter. They use that. Here's a house that we worked with the manager on placing. So they were not aware of our permitting or our zoning permitting process, and so we worked with them to. Identify the measurements that we would need from them to meet our process requirements. Anything else on that? Okay, Hickory Grove was established in 1957, and it has 40 lots. There has been no expansions at Hickory Grove. One of the interesting things about this park is that it is zoned A1, so the other two are residential manufactured home district, but this is in an A1 district. Here's a 1960s image, and it's the same space here. Here's a picture of their current shower facility, and they're using it for storage now. They did contact us. The owner of the park did contact us and say they're interested in expanding this park. And along with that, I got a call from an architect asking about our regulations for a storm shelter here, which would replace this building. Hickory Grove actually just got this spring a brand new driveway or road surface, and we're really impressed with that.
By far the nicest road system.
Mm-hmm. Here's just a picture of the garbage cans are unscreened, so that's something we would comment. Their dumpsters are unscreened, and that's something we would comment in a letter to the park. Here's an example. They are going to put up a new sign, and we inform them of our sign regulations, sign permitting process. A safety concern at Hickory Grove is this abandoned cable tower. Residents have put on satellite dishes on it for better reception. So might as well use it, right? Yeah. So we might explore some safety options for that. But
kids from climbing.
Yeah,
can
I get dummy-proof? Is that it?
Actually, somebody else brought that up. The safety aspect.
Okay. This is their wastewater treatment area. It was kind of neat because the manager was able to talk us through the whole process there, and he was very well versed in that storage area. This is the area to the north of the park, or the current park that they are looking to expand in. It is going to be, Jerry is working on correspondence with the owner. There's a couple things that are complications is the A1 district, and then also they need a 5-acre minimum to establish a mobile home park, and this area here is not 5 acres. So they're going to explore it, but Jerry has been in correspondence with them about that.
The rezoning for the mobile home park district, and then which would involve P&Z board supervisors, and then also they're required to submit like a development plan.
So this is
just the
expanse. If you stay the same, right.
Nothing.
If they expand,
right.
Can they count their existing acreage in the 5?
Yeah.
That's
a good question. That's part of the interpretation of it, which I'm kind of mulling in my mind.
if they rezone, then I don't know if I could.
Because we probably want to leave the existing
right
by itself as a non-conforming, because it's not going to meet the current standards.
Oh, okay.
There may be a way to include that, like some of the area on the west side of that furthest west drive. You might be able to get in a total of 5 acres if you include some of that area. And the thing, this is established what year?
1957.
And we don't really have like a drawing, like a plat.
Well, we have a...
Oh, we do?
We have a drawing.
But it's not...
But it's a drawing.
It's not an official
plat.
Okay.
Nothing official.
So... We'll get there.
They just were able to do it with no oversight or no permitting at all?
Prior to zoning.
Something like that was the first.
What, Leanne?
Yeah, study group.
1957?
Hey. You weren't working here. You're not old enough.
Okay, the last park we actually just visited on Friday afternoon, Country Living. This is out just north of Hickory Grove Park. Let's see. Country Living was established in the 80s. Now, let me make sure that's right.
Statue, that's what it says there.
Yeah. Established in the 80s. They did do an expansion, I want to say, in the early 90s here. As we look through the park, they have no plans for expansion. This is the entire parcel, though. You can see the lagoons here.
Upgrades to their lagoon.
Yeah, they are planning working with the city to upgrade their lagoon system. And they would donate a chunk of land to the city, and then kind of as a swap, the city would do the lagoon system for them.
So this is located where?
Near Colo.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's where the next restaurant is up front.
I'm sorry?
We're not talking about the same place? It's right by the little lake?
Do you have a zoom on this?
Oh, that's...
That's Twin Acres, you're right.
Yep, and that is RVs, and that... We went back and forth about this, but we kind of decided, for now at least, that was going to be an RV. It's not actually a mobile home park, so... but that might be something... Oh, yeah. It's just a little further east from there. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think right here is the RV park. Here's a kind of the recreation area, Country Living. This is a storage unit, but the shelter is below, so it's down below. Each of the residents has a key to the shelter, so they can get in there at any time. You can see the gravel road here. It was in pretty good condition. It was gravel, but it was in pretty good condition. They had good signage. They did have, and this is the only park we noticed that really had like open air storage of vehicles, and so they had a little bit of that here. But then they also had quite a bit of
issues.
Junk sitting around, and this is located. It's not in the if I wouldn't have asked about it, we wouldn't have seen it.
Yeah, it's on the far north side of the park,
right here, and it's kind of hidden by trees. So it's not like residents are seeing this on a daily basis, but there was quite a bit of junk. The manager mentioned that she planned to have it gone in the next few weeks, so. We will continue to correspond with her on that. She had a burn pile here. And then also this right here, it's hard to see, but it was a big pile of tires. Amelia was able to provide her with information on disposal of tires. So that was good, and she was happy to hear that. But we'll continue to work with her on the other stuff.
The appliances, she has somebody that comes periodically and I think that helps with the recycling of the component parts, like the washer and dryer and things.
Mm-hmm. This is
once a month or so.
Yeah, this is a picture of the lagoons. Back here, this is looking. South. Back here is the area they're going to donate to the city for the upgrade. So here are our findings. We found no big surprises, which we're happy about. Hickory Grove, we were pleasantly surprised with their new drive because it was really nice. The expansion, we are corresponding with the park about, and then also working with them to add a new storm shelter. Country Living, the new lagoon system. One of the issues at both Hickory Grove and Rolling Hills was a feral cat issue. They had mentioned to us that animal control will not take them if people are feeding them. So there were quite a few at those two parks. So
the raccoon?
They're wild. The people in the park are feeding them.
Yeah.
What's that?
They're no one's pet. Right. It's not someone's pet. It's just like...
They're not vicious. They're
So that was an issue, and we do plan to talk to animal control about that and see what we can do. Another thing we found, and this was with Rolling Hills because they were bringing in a couple new homes kind of right during this time that we went to visit them. The lot lines are not recorded on Beacon, so we want to see if we can get that completed so that we have record of, and we can use the lot lines to figure out where the homes need to be. So our next steps are to give each park a letter specific to our safety concerns in the park, a copy of the ordinances and our expectations of the process when placing new homes and building accessory structures, decks, and adding new signage. We also want to do a summary report to each of the parks. We asked for, or to all of the parks, one report and kind of summarizing what we found at each park, just some highlights. That will be really just an overview. We did ask each park to provide us with their rules, so having that will be a good resource for us to share how other parks do it, how other parks take care of certain problems, rules they've created in response to issues. We want to continue communication with the park managers. Maybe this is an annual meeting or an annual letter. We'll see on that. We have nothing in specific in place yet. We will discuss the feral cat issue with animal control. Provide some resources for taking care of some of the junk that is in the parks.
Really, it was just that one.
Yeah, really just that one. Yep. And Amelia, like I said before, Amelia has already started this, providing a place for the tires. We'll work with Hickory Grove to communicate the process for expansion. And then talk to with the auditor's office about mapping some of the lots on Beacon and getting that updated. And then other suggestions from you would be great, or any questions. Thank you.
Yeah, we talked about this a while ago. This is a good progress on, getting caught up on where all of them are at, which we lost sight of, and then, starting that communication process of here's what the ordinances are, and,
requirement permit for.
If I remember, this was kind of brought up in response to Crestview, but that one we were aware of just because of the reports. But we were curious about where the other ones were at. But I think the goal was to help with overall improvement, and I think that plan will help with that. But what is the long-term plan for Crestview?
Long term, they've got to scale down from like 40 some units to less than 15. and or no more than 25 people.
Is that because of their, what is that in relation
to? Basically the water issue.
So they don't have clean water supply, or?
It's being monitored by our environmental health department a couple times a week right now. Yeah. So they have to get that under control. But I think that's the goal, is for it to be small, low key, low scale, and continue with the quality of the water, and then we're going to have to deal with...
I mean, if they resolve the water quality issue, then there would be no problem with them going back to 40 units, or, I mean, that's my question. What's the long term?
Would you mind stepping in?
I'm Deb Schildroth. For those of you who don't know me, we had the Board of Health meeting yesterday, and the closure order is still in effect. That was essentially extended from July 5th to December 1st. And during that time, the park owner has come forward with a plan to downsize, and by downsizing to less than 15 units, that removes the DNR oversight of the water quality. DNR would continue having oversight over the wastewater system and solid waste issues. And those issues haven't been dealt with yet, because we're just focusing on the water quality. So the park owner has an attorney. They came and worked through a plan with the Board of Health yesterday. And so he has to be down to less than 15 units by August 8th, and then has looping to do with the water system, wants to move some mobile homes around to place them all on the north side of the park. So all of that has to be done then by December 1st. If it's done before December 1st, then the Board of Health will rescind the closure order, but that's... December 1st is kind of the... So going back to your question, Marvin, I mean, could he go back to, you know, to a larger site? If he does, then it goes back under the jurisdiction, the water piece of it goes back under the jurisdiction of the DNR.
So the goal of Crestview is not actually to resolve the water quality issue, it's just to get under the requirement for monitoring...
No, the water quality issue still has to be addressed. There has to be three... consecutive tests with good results, and that is being looked at between the time frame of now and December 1st as well. If not, the closure would still stand. So that has to be addressed.
Other questions for Seth?
Well, I'm sure there are other issues with Crestview. Are you just going to hold
the primary
in abeyance until the water issues resolved?
Environmental health and the board of health has been meeting with them a lot, and we didn't want to bring up other issues while the main focus was taking care of the people and the water quality issues.
So if they're still open after December 1st, you'll do a review on all the other issues.
Yes. Yeah.
If not before then. And there's delinquent taxes. I mean, there's
a lot of
money. I would just assume, you know, from things I've heard that water quality is not the only thing to be concerned about, but I can also understand, let's deal with this issue first and then go on to the others. That does make some sense.
The water is really an immediate health issue.
Yes.
Yes.
And the boil order is still, or advisory is still in place out there as well.
Thank you. Okay, if there's no more questions, we'll move on to the next item. Construction demolition manager.
This is Amelia.
I like your name.
Thanks. It's very similar to Emily's, though.
I get confused all the time.
Some people get
confused. That's his problem.
Very.
That's his problem.
We're going to start wearing name tags.
We already do.
But I can see.
Sorry. Slideshow. Okay. So I'm going to be talking to you all today about our next work program item, which is a draft proposal for disaster debris management siting, or what was originally construction and demolition landfill siting in case of an emergency or temporary need for one here in Story County. So a little bit of background. Currently, the Boone County Landfill provides for the disposal of construction and demolition waste in Story County. We are part of the Central Iowa Solid Waste Management Association with Boone and Greene Counties. And so that is, Boone County Landfill is the designated place of disposal for construction and demolition waste for that region. C&D waste includes materials that you would create through the construction and demolition of buildings or housing. And this is just a map so you can see where the Boone County Landfill is, just south of 30, southwest of Boone. So the concern driving this work program item was that if there was a disaster here in Story County that created more waste than was able to be processed and disposed of in Boone, what would happen? And so the Iowa DNR provides several remedies for that type of situation. There's no provision specifically for a temporary construction and demolition landfill, but there are three other potential ways we could deal with this type of situation following Iowa code and DNR regulations on solid waste and construction and demolition waste. So the first would be an operational procedural order for solid waste provisions. And this is when the governor issues a natural disaster declaration. There is some flexibility provided in complying with solid waste or construction and demolition waste regulations or requirements. So this could apply in a number of cases. The amount of waste Boone could take potentially, where that waste could be taken. This provision will come up several times in looking at different requirements for the disposal of this waste. Exceptional event exceptions to waste flow requirements is a second option that we could pursue. So like regular planning, each association or region has a comprehensive plan for waste flow management that they have to follow in the disposal of waste. And so there are exceptions to this plan. And those are called exceptional event exceptions for natural disasters, that kind of thing, tornadoes. And so these exceptions include several different things that are applicable in this situation. The first would be that in the case of an exception, the Iowa DNR will work with a municipality to identify a neighboring disposal facility to take care of the excess waste, if that is necessary. I also found it interesting in terms of the budgeting for this kind of thing that these exceptional event exceptions also allow for exceptions to waste tonnage fees. So that's good to know going forward. The third remedy that I talked to the Iowa DNR about would be an emergency solid waste transfer station permit. A normal transfer station is a sanitary disposal project that you bring waste to after you pick it up to sort or store for a short amount of time before it is transported to its final destination. And so in the case of an emergency, the Iowa DNR will issue a temporary emergency solid waste transfer permit for these type of activities if it is not, and this is from the Iowa code, not technically feasible to direct haul with solid waste collection vehicles and manage the solid waste at another sanitary disposal project in the service area or surrounding service areas. So that would include Boone County Landfill or surrounding service area landfills. So this is the definition of solid waste, which I thought might be helpful in considering these types of things. It's general, and I followed up with the Iowa DNR on this and haven't heard back quite yet, but it's garbage, refuse, rubbish, and other similar discarded solid or semi-solid materials. And my question was, does this pretty general definition include construction and demolition waste specifically? And they referred me to this type of permit, so I'm assuming it does, but I don't want to make that assumption because we know what happens. So given that, I still went ahead and did a site analysis for where an emergency solid waste transfer station could be located if it were to be necessary. There are several different selection criteria in this analysis. Story County Land Development Regulations, if you're referencing the table that we looked at in the first presentation, say that construction and demolition landfills can be located in zoning districts with a conditional use permit. We'll go over which zone districts those are in a second, but that is in our code. So I looked at that criteria. I also looked at several criteria outlined in the Iowa code for where transfer stations could be located. There's distances from schools, location of floodplain, that kind of thing to consider. So county zoning requirements, construction and demolition landfills can be located in A1, A2, commercial, light industrial, and heavy industrial zone districts with a conditional use permit. In A1 districts, there is a requirement that it cannot have a LISA score of a high LISA score to protect agricultural value of a site. And I did not look at LISA scores for all of these parcels because that would have taken a lot of time. But we will do that in the future. So these are sites in blue meeting county zoning requirements.
Wow.
It's a lot.
Which is good, right?
Yeah.
We have options.
Iowa code requirements. Transfer stations, like I previously stated, cannot be located within the floodplain. They cannot be located within 500 feet of an educational or healthcare facility. So this next map looks at those requirements, as well as areas identified as environmental valued areas, or environmentally sensitive areas. I thought that was a good criteria to throw in there, too. So we're not looking at county parks right now. So again, in blue, we have the sites that meet both county requirements and Iowa code requirements. Still a lot. So other considerations to be made in picking a particular site would be, these were just some ideas that we brainstormed of sites that could be good candidates, tax sale properties that we could take possession of, sheriff sale properties, or already county-owned properties. And so I highlighted on this map in red, there's about 16 parcels, most of which are adjacent to each other, tax sale properties, except one that came to mind, which is the former county home site. That entire site does not meet requirements, but a good chunk of it does, about 5 acres. Oh, and it's labeled, but I'll point it with the laser pointer, too. So this guy right here, just north of Highway 30.
So how many acres is it total, and why does the other part not meet requirements?
The other part, I believe, it's a quarter, so it's about 40 acres. I'm remembering this, so I'm sorry if I'm wrong. Part of it is in the floodplain, and part of it is near a single-family dwelling.
Okay. But so 5 acres is okay.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's about 5 acres I tried to measure it out on Beacon that would be permitted. In the southern part of the parcel. And we would, of course, need to talk to everyone that uses that parcel, ensure there's no conflicting use. I know, Nancy, you brought up a few things that are there. We do a site visit, that kind of thing.
Who does use it now?
I know County Engineering uses it for storage.
Okay. The sheriff uses it again as a gun range, practice range. And also there's a cemetery there. Called Noel Cemetery.
Oh.
And there are 54, I believe, people buried there.
Mm-hmm.
Is the cemetery active?
Okay.
They better not be.
Just at night.
Within or outside of 5 acres.
When I looked at the satellite photo, I didn't see any evidence of a cemetery in this portion.
There
I
is.
Could look closer. In this portion, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Not in the whole thing.
Part of the sighting is like the scope and the magnitude of what event we're trying to deal with, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's a smaller scale, then maybe we only need 5 acres, but if it's a huge F4, F5 tornado, we might need twice that.
Right.
The key word is temporary.
So that brings us to the next step, which would be having discussions about that kind of thing with other county departments, engineering. The Iowa DNR has offered to review the sites, too. We, of course, want to talk to them. we're the first step, of course, is talking with you all about this. If there's any other thoughts on sites that we're missing, bringing this to the Board of Supervisors as well, just as a draft proposal. And then we'd also have to have a few additional questions answered from the DNR before we could secure a site. We'd also want to consider partnering with other jurisdictions. I just looked at parcels that are in the county, unincorporated. And potentially, you know, there's other recreation or open space available that wasn't included in this analysis that other county departments would know about. We'd have to calculate lease scores if they were A1 zoned properties and begin the conditional use permit process for any parcel. We would also, if it was a tax sale property, that can take a while, up to 3 years, to obtain a deed. So we might want to identify a temporary site that's already county owned, like the county home site or another site. And Jerry mentioned that we might want to consider a preparation of a request for proposals for solid waste collection in this case, if an emergency situation were to arise. And the third step, I thought, would be to begin that waste flow planning process, the exceptions to the exceptions process, where we get an agreement in advance with a neighboring solid waste disposal project, not Boone necessarily, another one, that in the case that something were to happen where our solid waste facility in Boone or Ames couldn't handle all the debris, that we would have an agreement already in place with another location that maybe could help out in that kind of situation. So that's where we're at.
I was just thinking Marshall, Hamilton, or Hardin might be, if you know, depending on where the this disaster happens in the county. They might.
What about having more than one? And this is right smack dab in the middle of the county.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just, I mean, it's a very good location.
It's a good location, but it's not to stay enough.
Well, it sounds like it is. But then have multiple locations so that it's close to the other, other counties.
Right.
Because, I mean, if we've got a big disaster, it's going to affect travel ability.
Did I remember seeing something about the tax sale properties that take 3 years?
I talked to the treasurer's office about that because the tax sale just happened. So there was a nice list that I could compare with. And that would take up to 3 years because you have to go through, and I'm not an expert on this process, but you have to try to collect the taxes, I believe.
How many times have all scoped?
Exactly. And share sale properties, you can take possession of those sooner. I've kept updated on that list. I think they update it once a week. It's on their website. But those are mainly properties in the city of Nevada right now. So there's nothing.
What is this? What share sale?
That's a good question.
That one I don't know about.
It's, I think share takes this, I don't know.
Through, like, were they involved in drug issues?
Maybe,
or
yeah.
Through their work?
Mm-hmm. But you don't have the same
properties.
I wouldn't collected. Share that with anybody. I call that confiscation.
I'm guessing, I'm assuming that's
something.
It came with civil forfeiture.
Makes sense.
They're called share sale.
That's a little different too.
Civil forfeiture is what you're calling confiscation.
Maybe.
I don't know it's share sale, but they're using
that's a new one.
Absolutely. Necessary to the county, you have to own a property in order to utilize it for a temporary emergency transfer station. I mean, couldn't you come up with a lease? If you had two dozen possible sites identified, couldn't you come up with a
or business?
Yeah.
I thought about that.
Like Martin Marietta or somebody, you know.
I can look into other, you know, potential agreements, example agreements, that kind of thing.
If you look at, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is Martin Marietta because you're used to already having cleared space with heavy equipment.
Yep.
That's true. Amelia, should you consider, like, the locations based upon, like, traffic on the road, for instance?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I didn't necessarily do that because if we're going back to this map, I looked at these properties that were just tax sale and the former county home site, and they were all pretty, they had pretty good proximity to major roadways, I felt. But we would definitely need to consider that as well as the weight that roads can support. That's a major factor as well.
Paved surface would be
paved surface.
So is there any reason why you don't just hand this over to emergency management now? I mean,
well, we're supposed to be working with them.
Yeah. But I mean, it seems like you've done a good analysis and identified would say maybe you could identify a few more sites just so that it's a long list, but why, at what point does this leave planning and developments?
I don't know that it was something we were just supposed to hand over to them. I think we were supposed to be working together with them and come up with
an idea, a
solution that can work in case we do have an event.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be
something that would have to replace for the next 100-year flood, fire, wind, whatever it is.
In the case of a disaster, is landscape waste separated from construction and demolition waste?
That's what I tried to ask.
Oh.
I haven't heard that yet.
Okay.
But I can let you know.
In a perfect world, yes. If you can get the applicants, the property owners, to sort it before it's picked up, then it's a lot easier to deal with. Because otherwise you have to do all that sorting at the site.
Google property owners have to arrange two pickups.
Would you be the designated director of this, designated agent? Or would that involve...
That's just on the other ordinance.
Well... Somebody's
got
to take the health department or the planning and director or the hands thing.
Special projects.
Yeah, there's a special project. We have the disaster recovery, disaster notification system. I can't remember the title.
So I think it'd be up to the board of supervisors to decide who's going to take the lead on something like this.
Yeah,
in case of an actual emergency.
That would have to be taken into account and determined prior to.
Probably emergency management would have a big role in that, but
yeah, that's it.
This is just the groundwork of trying to find a location that's suitable, that's workable.
Okay. Any other questions for staff?
Thanks for your input.
Good job, Elaine.
Thanks.
Anything else? Okay. Thank you, staff. Three big items off the work. Well, two and a half. two of them off the work.
Two big
items up. Okay, the next item on the agenda, we need to elect a vice chair. We currently have no vice chair for the planning commission. And volunteers?
Didn't we have to do that first of the year?
Scott
resigned.
Scott.
He's our vice chair.
Vice chair. I nominate Jared Hume. You don't have to do anything unless he dies or gets dressed or he's sick.
So, like every time?
Jared?
That's fine.
You willing?
That's fine.
Okay. Jared has accepted the nomination, and we need a voice vote to elect Jerry. Is voice vote okay?
Amen.
Let's roll call vote to elect Jerry as the vice chair. Get a roll call vote, please.
Merkin?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Barnwell?
Yes.
Cable?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Holstrom?
Yeah.
Miller?
Yes.
We probably should have done a motion and a second to create that nomination.
Sure.
So.
Get a name for the second, it doesn't matter.
I think we're all on the same page.
Yes.
Let's see, the next item is comments. Are there any comments from staff?
I don't have any comments. We just appreciate your input that you provided. Surely we do.
Field trips?
We're trying to organize a field trip to see like a Hubble Homes conservation residential subdivision. Mm-hmm. And hoping to do that like in August or September. Mm-hmm. If we have a limited number of development applications to review, but we'll keep you posted on that. The idea is that we would take the county van down there. It's got a capacity of 15, I believe.
So. You can provide a bus lunch?
We can if you want to eat too. Where is this going to?
Good morning.
Let's stop at the Dairy Queen on the way back.
You said Hubble Homes in Des Moines?
They're all over. I mean, in the metro. Somebody said they're up here too, but we're trying to figure out where some of the really good ones. Conservation and subdivisions. Where protecting the natural resource areas and the housing is outside of those areas and they're common, used by the benefit of all the people that live in there.
Typically smaller lots, but larger.
which everybody has access and use of.
Does that require a special events permit?
So far, not. So far, not. But we can build that into it.
All right. Are there any commission comments?
Yes, I do have a comment. I think some of you heard that the county supervisors yesterday approved the engineer going ahead and working on obtaining right-of-ways to pave Grant from 190th to Gilbert. And there was some discussion at that meeting about traffic that was going to happen there. There'd be a lot of traffic. I thought about this and thought, gee, it's too bad somebody didn't think earlier when the city was paving Hyde to do something to at least look like a roundabout or something there, because that can slow traffic, I think, in ways that are more efficient than four-way stops, which is what they're talking about. That may already be gone as a potential, but thinking about that area, again, the county supervisors approved the irons, and I'm hearing lots of concerns from people around that area about what all that is going to do to an already congested or very busy county road, you know, most of the time. And I just wondered if there's any way, and I know we aren't looking at the irons anymore because it's past us, but is there any way that we can talk about some of the traffic congestion that is happening in that area and what can be done about that, what recommendations could be made? Because it seems like before they get going too far along with that and their, you know, the proposed, you know, extension staying, it would be nice if somewhere in the county we were talking about traffic in that area of the county. Because there are concerns by people who live there.
We could visit with the county engineer about that.
Well, I thought about visiting with Jaron personally, but I thought, how does that fit with Planning and Zoning Commission? We're having a meeting tonight, so I thought I would just bring it up.
Can we invite them to come for a discussion? Who's them?
Jaron, county engineer.
What role does the planning? Does the planning commission play any role in the engineer, secondary roads, five-year improvements plan, and in the capital improvements plan? Could we play a role? Could we have a?
I'm not even thinking about playing a role in it, other than offering coordinating, right? Because we have a role in approving where development's happening and the city's doing development, and I'd be interested in, what are they doing with the roads? Because that would have an impact on where do we want development to happen.
I certainly think we could have a work session with the engineering department, could we not? And have a short list of issues. In questions, so
yeah. Or we could invite him to come and respond to issues or questions.
Put him first on the agenda, so it's 4 o'clock.
But on a planning standpoint, I mean, some of that we could be dealing with through regulation, too, like subdivision standards. Anytime you're bringing new development in, you're thinking about not just the piece that you're working on, the division, but like what's the long-term
And the growth there is going so quickly that we're looking at things almost piecemeal. And it's kind of like, how do we get it, because I've heard people out there say, is anybody thinking about the traffic they're creating when they're approving all of this?
How many people have approached you and had a problem?
Well, in the last week I've talked to about three people.
Have these three people directly communicated with Darren Moon?
I don't know that they have. But
that's what I would suggest, that they do that before we involve ourselves into that process.
I just want to have a discussion because I just want to know where they're at and what their approach is to how do they do long-term planning for secondary roads? Do they have any current plans other than the discussion that happened about Grant Road? Do they have any plans for the traffic on George Washington Harbor, which is, one of the instances?
Okay, you can look at their five-year plan online, and they've got it both pictorially, as well as the listings, and that is online. If you go to the county website, go to departments, and so on, you can find that readily available as to what they're for the least 5-year plans. And the way that that process there works is that each year, typically, unless there's a big emergency, typically, number 5 year moves into number 4 year, and then something's added to 5. That's the way that whole thing. So you can look at that and make some kind of a determination in terms of what is the long term. But as far as what's going on right now, I would say that the people that have a problem should communicate with the maybe even a combination of the Board of Supervisors and the county engineer.
And yeah, the reason I really did bring it up is I think it does relate to the work that we do. If we're looking at a conditional use permit for this or that, I mean, one of the things there is traffic, what traffic is going to be created. I don't think having the discussion hurts at all.
The comp plan, too, is kind of the new plan we adopted. It has a component where it's talking about the current system and proposed improvements and that kind of thing. But I was thinking, too, through work program, if there's things that could be brought into that, well, we're working with the engineering and other departments like we're doing for other things. I don't see why you couldn't do that, too.
I certainly think we should all know the transportation section of the plan pretty well before we drag Darren in here, because that's what it's for. But I also love to have a conversation with Darren on a broader conversation about what are their concerns and what are our concerns and where do they overlap. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm a little frustrated with the interdepartmental review comments, how they're so cursory. And I wonder if sometimes the engineering department knew more about the kinds of things we're trying to tackle, if maybe we can get a little more detailed commentary from them on projects.
Great. So why don't we, Jerry, just the next time, it looks like we're going to have a relatively slow night. I know we're also trying to fit in an educational thing, a field trip, but maybe keep an eye out for an opportunity to get there into one of our meetings, ask things to come to one of our meetings.
Yeah, it's not to be critical. It's just to share what's going on and what we know and get some ideas of what is being thought about.
Are there other commissioner comments?
I already mentioned to them earlier about where is that index that we talked about last month in terms of for us to be able to more readily and easily find where within the code and so on are they applicable? In other words, does it say this? Let's go back to the index and look up certain words even and say, okay, now this goes to page.
I see that as a project that can fit in with, now that we have the comp plan approved, there's going to be some changes
to this?
That's going to come along through that.
And what's the time frame on that?
Well, actually, that was one of the things Aaron and I were working on, probably within the next 1 to 2 years.
What?
Hard to.
So we have to wait for an index to be effectively.
All the things that need to be addressed based on the counseling. 0 to 2 years is what I should say, not 1 to 2. 0 to 2.
I would add this. It would seem like a waste of time to.
No.
If we're making a lot of changes.
It's a quickie thing.
Nancy, he's talking about a full review of all of the development regulations. Mm-hmm. So if we put time into writing an index for existing regulations and then revamp the whole set of regulations, then we will waste all the time.
Part of one of the work program things is to look at all these regulations. So.
And to review each one that is older than a certain year.
Yeah, 1985.
In terms of their applicability and so on.
One thing we can do in the meantime, however, is staff, if when you do a staff report, you're usually really good about writing out all of what you think are the applicable regulations, but I wonder if you could all just put a list of references and page numbers in so that we can go right to that in the development regulations.
And put that in the part of our agenda beforehand so we can look at that.
So it'll be in the report that has a link to it on the website.
And where our agenda is posted.
Yes.
Because you can get the whole packet loaded down, which I'm sure everybody does. And then that's essentially his staff report, which would indicate.
Click on this report, you went to that report where it cited ordinance.
Exactly.
And you could include.
Yeah.
I think having those sites and page numbers would be helpful.
I mean, because remember,
you guys are paying.
We have a motion to adjourn. Is that a second?
Second.
Let's get adjourned.
Oh, table contents.